Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Time to talk vehicle maintenance, and Jim Ward is back with us. He retired as service manager of Smart Motors Toyota a while back. He was with the company for 36 years, and we're talking to him about getting more time out of your current vehicle. So, what questions do you have about general car maintenance? Are you having problems with your vehicle? Love to hear from you. You can call us at 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Jim Ward, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here this morning.
My vehicle, my Highlander, just turned over 100,000 miles.
Really?
This past week. And I think I had one, you know, about $750 expense with it a while, you know, 5 years ago maybe, but it's been running pretty good ever since.
That's great. That's great. That's what you want.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when it comes to oil, I take it in to the shop, to Smart, actually, for servicing, and I never worry too much about what oil they're going to put in because I know what they... you know, they're going to do right by me. But we do get a lot of questions about oil on these shows. Let's talk a bit about that before we take calls. What kinds of oil are out there, and how do you know which to use?
Well, there's conventional oil, there's synthetic oil, and there are blends. And, you know, there are different weights of oil beyond the different types of oil. You know, engines more and more increasingly use oils that are... very different, almost watery compared to how we started with when I started in this industry. 0W40, 0W50 seem like really thin oils, but they allow the engines to run much more efficiently. But, you know, the most important thing is that you have oil in your car. If you're ever in a situation where for some reason your car is low on oil, you know, in a pinch, you can interchange any of those engine oils. It's better than not having oil in the car at all or having it run low. But your best bet, if you're having an oil change, it'll say on the engine's oil cap or under the hood what weight of oil it should have. I mean, if you're having it done in a shop, they're going to know which weight of oil to put in. And when it comes to brand, you know, really there are a lot of different brands out there, and I've had. For the longest time in my vehicles, I ran Mobil 1 synthetic oil and got a lot of miles out of a lot of engines, tore them down at 250,000 miles, you know, on one particular vehicle, and it looked very clean inside. So I do believe synthetic oils offer a little better protection for the long term, but there's nothing like changing it on the interval that you're supposed to. Your manufacturer is going to have an interval that they recommend, a time or a mileage, whichever comes first, and that's really the key. Just keep up with it, keep it fresh, and the engine's going to last longer.
Yeah, oil additives, do they benefit?
I've never been a big fan of oil additives. There are special additives that, suppose if you have a leak, are supposed to help. Honestly, I think they're a waste of money. If you keep up with oil changes, do on a regular basis, I just don't believe you're going to need additives.
Peggy in Darlington has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm wondering about a vibration that I feel as I'm driving along. I had quite a bit of work done, well, probably 1,000 miles ago, and almost right away I started experiencing this vibration. I couldn't get back to the service center right away, but wondering if you have any idea what might be causing it. At that time, they replaced both rear wheel bearings, the front axle, and the front left ball joint.
Mm.
They recommended future strut mounts, balanced tires, which I've since done, and tube seals, which I don't think has anything to do with it. Any ideas?
Where's the problem, or is there a particular spot in the car?
It's a vibration. So as I start to drive, I can feel a vibration in the steering wheel.
Okay.
And it seems to be more when I'm turning, but it's there. You know, I was hoping nothing would break as I was driving along, but they did all this work on the left. I'm wondering if they should have done the right, or what are the...
You know, one of the things you mentioned, if I heard you right, that they recommended some other work for the future, and one of those things was balancing tires. Is that right?
I did do that.
Oh, you have that, have had that done. Because the classic symptom...
I had that done.
All right. The classic symptom of tires out of balance is a vibration in the steering wheel. A tire that has an issue, a tire that's got a tread issue or cupping in the tread can cause vibration. A tire that is balanced properly won't cause a vibration, but tire balance is a tricky thing. It's possible that something went wrong with that. What I would recommend really is taking it back to that shop that did the work. Have someone go for a ride with you. Show them what you're experiencing. You always start with the basics. I would, if they just balance the tires because they're the shop that balance them, balancing is done by putting weights on the wheel around it, and you can see if one of those weights has come off, and sometimes they do. Some they're kind of clamped on, and they can come off. There are lots of possibilities with a vibration. It could be something in the steering suspension, but the majority of time it comes down to tires and tire balance. And if you just had that work done there, I wouldn't expect to get the car back with a vibration like that. So I would go back and consult with them, show them what you're talking about, and have them check it out. It hopefully it's just a simple tire that they need to rebalance.
Yeah, makes good sense. Peggy, good luck. Thank you. Gary in Madison, we'll go to you. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Yeah, I've got a 2001 Toyota Sequoia, and it's got 185,000 miles on it. And I'm concerned at two things. One, the first is, should the timing chain be changed? And the other, is it necessary to change out the ball joints? Because somebody was telling me that those two areas you have to watch.
Well, ball joints have never been a problem typically on Toyotas. Toyota trucks, a lot of shops, one of the things as a service manager at a Toyota dealer over the years, I was kind of oddly envious of other manufacturer dealerships and we'd see it on used cars too, used trucks and stuff like that, seeing some common front suspension work of ball joints, not real unusual, but they don't tend to fail very typically at all on Toyotas, and they can be tested. There's this tool to check and see if it's got excessive play, but that's not a common repair. A timing chain is not typically a replacement item. Usually a timing chain is expected to last the life of an engine. They don't always. Timing belts, on the other hand, which serve the same purpose, is more of a wear item that does have an interval to replace about every 90,000 miles. But if you have a timing chain that's loose, typically it's going to be causing some telltale noise, rattling at the front of the engine, and that's something else. If you're pretty familiar, you could probably Google what that sounds like and find videos that would show you what a loose timing chain sounds like. But typically, neither one of those are common replacement items on a Toyota Sequoia.
There you go, Gary. Thank you for calling. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call with your vehicle question, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Gary in Luck, Wisconsin. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I've got a question about my 2014 Toyota Corolla. Took it into the dealer quite a while back, and they said, well, it's time to change your spark plugs. But I declined when I learned that it was going to be like $450. So my question, how important is it to change spark plugs?
Well, the spark plugs, they typically are not a breakdown item. If a spark plug starts to fail, you may get a misfire that may turn the check engine light on. On some type of vehicles, and not so much again on Toyota, some type of vehicles, a bad spark plug can eventually relate to and cause some other ignition system problems and damage, but I don't tend to see that on Toyotas. On some models of cars, there are spark plug layouts that are very difficult to get to the back of the engine, but that's not typically the case on a 14 Corolla. I'm not quite sure why that would be the price just for spark plugs. That sounds really, really high for that particular job. So I guess I would recommend getting a couple of different estimates from places. I don't know if there was other work they were also quoting, but that strikes me as really high for that job. The spark plugs typically on that car, I think, are about 120,000-mile interval. If you've got that kind of mileage on it, I would consider doing them. But, again, I would check around on price for that one.
Yeah. Good luck, Gary. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to John in Appleton next. Hi, John.
Yes, good morning. I have a similar question about a timing belt and a water pump. I've got a 2007 Honda Odyssey, and it's got about 175,000, 180,000 miles on it. And someone recommended, said, I just bought the vehicle about 6 months ago, and somebody said, well, you might want to look at replacing the water pump and the timing belt. Is that something I would need to really do?
Well, you know, the water pump on that engine is driven by, it's much easier to access, I guess I should say, if you're doing the timing belt. So, you know, if the timing belt has not been done at interval, and you, with your ownership, if you don't know, you know, you could have a Carfax done somewhere and look at maintenance history to see if you can tell when it's been done. But if it hasn't been done in its interval, it really should be, and it's probably about a 90 to 100,000 mile interval that it should be done. Yeah, that's something I would replace, because it can cause potential engine damage if that breaks. And again, the water pump is something that you have a lot easier access to, and is much less expensive to do at that mileage, when you're doing that job and you're doing a timing belt. So if you're going to do the timing belt, I would recommend doing both.
All right, John, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Dan in River Falls, on to you now. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. I've got a 2015 Honda CR-V that the alarm goes on by itself, and I took it to the dealership, and their code could machine didn't read anything. They said to bring it up when it happens sooner. It's a 45-minute drive there, so I took it to the local shop, and they had a snap-on reader, diagnostic thing, and they can't find anything on it. So I'm wondering what are some things I should check or can't check.
Well, that is one of those things that is kind of a catch-it-in-the-act. Yeah, it's not likely to leave a code or something that you're going to be able to do diagnostics on if you're not catching it in the act. You know, most typically, when an alarm goes off like that, I've seen this caused very often by a malfunctioning door lock. An automatic door lock actuator may malfunction. It may actually unlock one of the doors, and the moment that happens, it's going to think someone's trying to break in, and the alarm's going to go off. So, but again, the difficulty of knowing which, if it is a door lock, for example, which is one of the more common things I've seen to cause that, knowing which one of them it is a matter of almost seeing it doing it. You know, I have in these scenarios, what I've done in the past is to have the car left at the shop, leave it right in the drive-thru, and you know, in a far aisle, and hook up a computer to it that's constantly monitoring and can record. So you can push a button, and it's always recording, but you push a button, and it pretty much records the previous 5 minutes. And then you go run over there. As soon as somebody hears the alarm, you kind of instruct everybody on the drive, run over there and push this record button, and then you go back and look at the data, and you know, sure enough, you'll see, oh, the left rear door unlocked just a second before that went off. That's the only way I've ever been able to diagnose something like that is actually literally catch it red-handed. You obviously, you don't want to start just randomly replacing door lock actuators and things like that. And it may not even be that. It could be a wire connection somewhere else in the vehicle, but that's the kind of scenario I've seen to cause this, and that's the way that I've had to get a handle on it before, is to have equipment hooked up to it, sitting, and literally record it kind of, you know, retroactively. The equipment can do that, and that's probably what it's going to take to get to the bottom of this.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate the call. Jim Ward, our guest today, retired as service manager of Smart Motors Toyota of Madison, our guest today. You can join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer. Tyler Dinner, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your automobile today and problems it may or may not be having, how to make your car last a bit longer. Jim Ward, retired service manager of Smart Motors Toyota, our guest today. Always great to have Jim stop by. And again, join in, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Joseph in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, Joseph.
Hi. Got a Avalon 06 Avalon. And the battery car won't start, but the battery sounds, it seems good. Tried to jump it, it wouldn't start. But the starter just has one click, and that's it. Is it a starter?
Well, it certainly could be. That's a classic symptom of a starter, and ultimately there's a couple pretty simple tests that will tell us. You know, you can test to see if there's voltage at the starter. Generally don't recommend taking a hammer and tapping on engines, but, you know, a classic, if you can't get help somewhere, a classic tip is to tap on the end of the starter with a hammer while someone's trying to start it, and if it is the starter, that often will make it turn over. You know, not necessarily the easiest. If you can't really do it by yourself because you can't sit there and turn the key at the same time you're tapping the starter, and it would have to be done simultaneously. But that if you know that the battery is good, it's been tested or something, if you know if you've got a good battery, and you just hear a single click, that is a classic symptom of a starter. Could potentially be something else, but that is a likely scenario.
There you go, Joe. Joseph, thank you so much. Joe from Madison emailed. He has a 2017 Chevy Trax with 60,000 miles on it. He's getting an engine light occasionally and a message that says, service stable track. This usually happens when the weather is cold. When this happens, the car idles rough and it jerks until it picks up speed. Once he's going over 10 miles an hour, it performs normally. It doesn't happen in the summer or when it's warm. It just doesn't happen. He checked online, read some things online about the injectors maybe being sticky in cold weather, which would trip or could trip the stable track error. And then he wonders if E15 fuel might be a problem.
Well, in cold weather, E15 fuel can cause sluggish running like that, particularly when you first start out. So that is possible. That may be what's going on there. It typically doesn't cause a warning light. And the stable track, we may have a sensor problem there that's causing it to trip that code as well. You know, it ultimately, again, this is the kind of thing we're catching in the act. The code itself is probably not going to completely, you know, getting a code for a check engine light won't completely diagnose it. But, you know, if you have equipment hooked up to it, looking at the data as it's doing it, that is the way you're going to get to the bottom of what's going on there.
Yeah. Rebecca in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Okay, so I have a 2005 Toyota Highlander. It was my mom's old soccer van, and now it's mine. But it has about 266,000 miles on it. And every time I turn my car on, it squeaks, like, super loud. Like, people at the end of the block can hear it.
Sure. Yep, your engine's got drive belts, or what they're called, on it that run the various accessories that run the alternator and other equipment off of the engine, and a belt could just be loose or they get glazed. You know, we used to worry about drive belts breaking. We don't see them break very much anymore. They're made out of materials where it seems like they just about stay on there and last forever. But what they do is they eventually harden and get glazed up and make that kind of a squealing noise. And, yep, neighbors, if you have to go somewhere early in the morning, the neighbors, I'm sure, just love it. You know, that's often the reason people come and say, I've got to get this replaced. It's driving my neighbors crazy. But that's most likely what you got going on there. You know, maybe there's just a belt adjustment, but you probably need a belt replaced.
There you go, Rebecca. Good luck. Thank you. Judy in Madison, your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I have a question. I have a 2014 Kia Soul with 90,000 miles on it. And recently, like within the last 2 weeks, I've heard this funny, you know, years ago I would have called it like lifters, but and noise. And I called the people that do my oil change and whatnot. And, well, they couldn't get me in, but I said, well, I don't know if I should drive it. And he said, well, I'll come and he said, bring it by and I'll look at it. And it was down 2 quarts of oil. And it had only, I've only gone about 1,200 miles on the oil change. There's no leakage under the car, nor has there ever been anywhere. And otherwise, now it seems to be running fine. I don't hear it that much. And I'm just wondering, you know, in the day-to-day life in the garage, do sometimes they forget to put oil in?
Well, you know, the guys that work on cars are human beings just like anybody else, and you know that can happen. It's not like they would not put any oil in it, but you know, if you work on a lot of different cars as a tech, you bring one car in after another, and they have different quantities of oil, and obviously they should be able to keep that straight, and the vast majority of the time they do. It's also possible, yes, it is possible that they may have short-filled it. They may have, oh, this engine takes this, and they, you know, maybe they made a mistake, and it's an engine that takes, you know, a quarter or two more than that. The other unfortunate possibility is that your engine may have started to consume oil, and, long ago, engines would, you know, the exhaust system would smoke, your exhaust would be, you know, sooty and smoky if you were burning that much oil, but modern engine exhaust systems have emission components in them, catalytic converters that clean a lot of that up. You don't see that kind of smoke from engines burning oil, so the thing that you're going to want to get in the habit of is checking your oil, and you should be checking it every couple hundred miles at this point at first, and, you know, if it's burning oil, you're going to start seeing that oil level go down, and it isn't necessarily an indication you have to do a major engine repair, but you got to keep oil in it. So, you know, if you start checking that oil and you never see it go down and you go through the rest of your oil change interval and you never have a problem again, then your most likely scenario is that they short-filled it. They didn't put enough in when they did the oil change. But, you want to find out which it is. If it is using oil, then you're going to want to get in the habit of adding some oil between oil changes to make sure you keep up with it.
There you go, Judy. Thank you so much for calling. Speaking of...
The other thing I wanted to mention, Gary with that Sequoia had called earlier, and it was talking about a timing chain. And what I had to, because Sequoias over the years, some of them had timing chains, some of them had belts. I had to scrape the cobwebs away a little bit. Think about this. His 01 Sequoia has a timing belt, and that does have a 90,000-mile replacement interval. So just if he's still listening, hopefully he is, that is not a timing chain in that vehicle. It is a belt, and it should be replaced every 90. So he said 185,000, it would about be due.
Okay. On oil, Aaron emailed. He has 2020 VW... what are they called, T1, something like that. It uses an oil type with Euro in the name, specifically OW20 Euro. Is this oil much different or required to be used? It was substantially more expensive.
You know, if you use a 0W20 oil, you should be able to use any brand. The Euro is you know, different manufacturers sometimes have proprietary recommendations for specific oils from specific companies, but again, 0W20 oil will keep that engine healthy no matter what brand it is.
Jack in Eagle River, on to you now. Hi, Jack.
Hi, I have a 2014 Subaru Outback, almost at 100,000 miles. I'm just looking for any words of wisdom regarding changing the CVT oil, recommendations, if to do it, if not to do it, if you do it when. That kind of thing.
I don't believe that there's a manufacturer interval for changing CVT oil, but you know it is at 100,000 miles. It's turned 100,000 miles and done a lot of work. It's a synthetic oil. If you want to make a vehicle last and look at getting 200,000-400,000 miles out of it potentially, I would look at changing that oil. It isn't that expensive to do. It's not like an automatic transmission where you've got a filter and a lot of other things involved, like a conventional automatic transmission. So it's not a bad idea. I don't believe there's a manufacturer recommendation for it. I think it's considered lifetime. But we've changed them in the shop on high-mileage vehicles. And, again, it's just preventative maintenance, never a bad idea.
Thanks, Jack. Appreciate the call. Sally emailed with a comment for the lady who called about a vibration. She had something similar, and her dealer turned off the lane keeping feature that warns you when you are too close to the center line or the sideline by vibrating the steering wheel.
You know, those features are amazing. They often have a light that will come on and sometimes even an audible alarm. That'll come on, and it's amazing how often people ask to have them turned off, even though it is kind of like an angel riding on your shoulder. I don't know that Peggy ever mentioned what year and model vehicle she had. I think you would have other things going on there. If you're getting that vibration a lot from a lane deviation system, you know, it is the kind of thing where that you don't want to be deviating lanes a lot, for one thing, because it's going to make other drivers really nervous, can be potentially dangerous. So, you know, that equipment, although it can be turned off, I wouldn't really recommend it. I would just kind of pay more attention to lane position. But, you know, again, it is something that potentially could be, depending on the year and model of the car. But, I don't know that that's what Peggy was experiencing.
Karen in Madison, your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I just wanted to ask, I've got a Hyundai Elantra. That's 2004, and it's got like 1,100 miles on it. So I took it in, and since I want to go to Boston or I want to use it without worry, so I spent $3,500 getting it all fixed, you know, so it would be safe and drivable. I just wondered, I got it back. It just, for recommendations, it says due for tune-up and needs engine degreased, check for oil leaks. Power steering fluid is dirty. Would that keep me from being safe since they filled it? I just wondered if that's something.
Yeah, to think about. Okay.
Tune-up is a pretty general term. Usually when we say tune-up, we're talking spark plugs, air filter, that kind of thing. They can affect the efficiency of an engine, generally not a breakdown issue. You know, you might get a little bit of gas mileage if you're on a trip to Boston if you do the tune-up. They're recommending degreasing the engine because they must be seeing oil somewhere on the engine that is making them believe that there's some kind of an oil leak. So it's hard to diagnose an oil leak on an engine unless it's a really, really bad leak coming out really quickly without degreasing it first, getting that grease off and then watching to see where it's coming from. And again, power steering fluid is typically not a fluid that has a replacement interval for it. So, you know, yeah, it does get darker over time. If there aren't other reasons that they're recommending that, I probably wouldn't be too excited about the power steering fluid. So with these things, in my opinion, the highest priority would probably be just to get the engine degreased and have them check and see what that leakage. It may just be seepage, and it may not be something that requires attention right away. I don't know that any of these three things, if you're not seeing drips of oil under your vehicle, if they're just seeing some oil on it and it's not so severe that you're getting little oil puddles under it, I don't know that any of those three things are things that would cause you a breakdown on a trip like that, though, Karen.
Yeah. Karen, good luck on the trip. Thank you for calling. Henry emailed us. He says he's wondering if it's worth paying for a garage versus keeping his car outside. How does it impact the longevity of the vehicle to have it inside versus, you know, just sitting outside all the time?
Well, the sun is hard on everything on the outside of a vehicle. You know, depending on the year and model of the vehicle, the earlier headlight lenses that were a poly type of plastic would tend to smoke and, you know, haze up real bad in the sun. Your paint will fade over time. You're just sitting out in the winter in various types of precipitation when, you know, snow and ice can sit in a car, melt and freeze up somewhere else. It can and get in between pieces of trim and start to loosen things up. So, you know, it isn't most of the serious things you depend on that absolutely make your car operate safely when you're driving it are probably not going to be that greatly affected by sitting inside or outside of a garage. But the appearance items, you know, the trim and a lot of just how the car looks overall are going to be easier to maintain and are not going to show as much wear if a car is kept in a garage.
Scott in Iron River, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Scott.
Hello there. I've been wondering for a long time the benefits of using and paying the money for the higher octane gasoline. I have a 2020 Tacoma four cylinder that I seem to notice an improvement in gas mileage, you know, as much as 2 miles, 2 miles per gallon. And when I use the medium grade octane gasoline. So if you could comment on that, I sure appreciate it. Thank you.
You know, and that's something that you may get a slightly better gas mileage on a higher octane fuel, and you have to, you know, it's not like it's going to hurt the engine to use the lower octane if it's, you know, and different vehicles have different manufacturer recommendations. Usually a higher performance engine vehicle is going to require, or it's going to be recommended that you use a higher octane for the 20 to Tacoma, that wouldn't be the case. The 87 is something that is okay to use in it. And again, you may notice a little bit improved gas mileage, but you got to do the math and figure out how much more are you paying for that higher octane of fuel, and is the increased fuel mileage actually paying for itself? Are you actually paying more for the fuel than you're gaining in gas mileage? There really is no other advantage to that fuel. A little bit better efficiency, sometimes a little bit more power, but I would. It just comes down to doing the math. How much more are you paying for the fuel over the course of a tank of gas? Is that couple miles to the gallon going to pay for that?
Good luck, Scott. Thank you for calling. Helen in Little Chute, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Helen.
Hi. One of my favorite programs. Thanks for the show, Larry. Mm-hmm. I have a 2006 Honda Civic that I bought new. I have 150,000 miles on it. I always love Hondas and Toyotas because they last forever. My air conditioning kind of died last summer, so I had Freon put in two different times, and it only lasted 4 days, the cool air. So my question is, do I need a compressor, or what would you suggest?
Well, you have a leak, and you need to have the leak fixed. So it's probably, you could have a leak in a compressor, but that doesn't mean you need a compressor. It may just be a seal at a fitting in the air conditioning system. Typically, when an air conditioning system is recharged with Freon, we put a dye in it, and hopefully whoever did that service put a dye in it. And the dye tends to make a stain at the fitting where it leaked out. Even without the dye, air conditioning systems have a lubricant in them that just helps lubricate the compressor and all the rest of the system. That also tends to leak out. So even without the dye, someone going over the air conditioning system, looking at each fitting between each of the components and where the hoses connect and everything, often we'll be able to see where that leak is. It really shouldn't be recharged until the leak is fixed. That refrigerant getting into the atmosphere is not good for the atmosphere, and technically a shop should tell you that. The laws are that a shop cannot legally charge a system they know has a leak. But if you're doing a leak detection, you charge it and you don't see any leaks, then you don't have to pull the Freon back out. So it must be a slow enough leak that it's not obvious when they have it running in the shop, but it should leave a visible sign somewhere. There are some connections in the air conditioning system, like where the unit in the dash, where the evaporator in the dash is connected, that are not necessarily that easy to get to and do a simple inspection, but they can be accessed, they can be inspected, and obviously you start with the simple ones under the hood, and that's what needs to be done here to get to the bottom of where your Freon leak is.
All right. Helen, good luck. Rose in Washburn, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Rose.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question about a brake sound. Occasionally when my car sits for a long time, when I start and use it for the first time, the brakes makes kind of like a scrapey noise or something. I think that's just corrosions that build up on the rotor. However, I was driving it yesterday and it made that sound, but the sound doesn't go away. It seems like it's worse when I first put on the brakes, gently.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tried to make the sound come back again by putting on the brakes harder, and I'm not hearing it. So I guess it's, of course, happened right before I'm heading out on a trip, and I wonder if I should be concerned or if it's just maybe a slight rotor warp.
Well, the brake rotor, if it's warped, you're going to feel a vibration. You're going to either feel it in the seat or if it's a front brake, you're going to feel it in the steering wheel rocking back and forth while you're braking. But what you at first had mentioned is that the car sits sometimes, and after it sits, it does that. And that can be very common. Unfortunately, the sound that oxidation, a little bit of rust builds up on the brake disc or brake rotor, same. And that getting scraped off tends to make that kind of a noise. Not all brake pads do it. Different brake pads are made up of different compounds, and some vehicles never do it, and some vehicles are notorious for it. But what you describe is just classic for that. That oxidation will build up when the car sits because there's no friction there to grind it off. You start to drive the car. When you brake, you can hear kind of a grindy or squeaky noise when you're braking, and, typically it grinds it off pretty quickly. So then as you drive along, you don't hear it anymore until the car sits for a while. The brakes really should be looked at a couple of times a year anyway to make sure you don't have something hanging up and they're wearing unevenly or about about to wear out and become a more expensive brake job if you don't replace them before they go metal to metal. So, you know, if you haven't had your brakes looked at for a while, it might not be a bad idea. But this could be, and probably is, a very normal scenario of just oxidation buildup on the rotors that's getting ground off when you drive. If you're driving along and you brake a little bit harder and the noise stops, that's just classic for oxidation noise from the brake discs.
Calling, appreciate your call. You can join in too. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jim Ward, our guest today, retired service manager of Smart Motors Toyota of Madison, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network as we take a look at your vehicle and its maintenance with Jim Ward, retired service manager of Smart Motors Toyota of Madison. He was with the company 36 years, and he knows an awful lot. Great to have him along. John emailed us. He has a 2012 Tacoma without cooling. The AC light blinks after a minute or so. Then the clutch disengages. The clutch, the relay, and the fuse are all okay. What does the blinking light mean?
Well, it could be different things, but in my experience, that has typically been a failed rotation sensor for the air conditioner compressor. That light flashing is kind of a diagnostic indication, but again, just there's different things that could be going on, but in my experience, probably 90% of the time or greater, that is what's going on. It's the rotation sensor that tells the computer that runs the air conditioning system that the compressor is indeed turning is probably not telling it that, and so it won't let the system operate.
All right. Cheryl in Eau Claire, we're on to you now. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi there. I have a key fob issue with my 2015 Rogue, and I step on to start it, and sometimes it'll click and everything will just click. You know, won't start, and I'll get a warning light, no key fob. I took it to Nissan, changed the key fob batteries. I've had to buy a new key fob and have it reprogrammed. I've had a starter test. And it seems like it depends how I step on the gas to start. And he said, too, to hold the key fob by the push button because I don't have a spot to insert a key inside my car.
Right. Well, that is pretty odd. You know, so I've seen some scenarios like this where we just had a mystery as to why this car, I mean, a battery going bad in the key fob is the most common thing, and usually they'll last 2 to 3 years. But that key fob and the locks on the car and the ignition on the car are always trying to communicate with each other. So one of the things that we found when sometimes we just have a mystery is why does the battery keep going bad on this key fob is that it shouldn't be stored within about 3 meters of the car, so like 10, 15 feet. And sometimes people have a garage and will park the car in the garage and have like a mudroom or something where they'll hang the key right there 10 feet away from the car, and it never really lets the system go to sleep then, and the key fob battery just keeps getting this ping that the car's right there. So that is a possibility. If you are storing that key fob, if it's actually fairly close to the car, that could be one cause of it. Otherwise, you know, there may be something going on with that, with the ring around the ignition and that system that's supposed to be sensing the key fob that it's just not picking the signal up. There are testers for the fobs, though, that basically you know, if you go, the dealership likely has one, any place that sells batteries plus, places like that have them, where you push on that on the remote and you can see how strong the signal is. In other words, if you hold it away from the tester, the signal strength gets weaker, as it should, but if it isn't giving any signal within 2 or 3 feet, that can tell you that your key fob may and likely is the problem, as opposed to something else in the car. But yeah, one of the more common things I've seen is just storing the keys when you're not driving the car too close to the car.
All right. Cheryl, thank you for calling. Andy in Minocqua, on to you now. Hi, Andy.
Hey, good late morning to you guys. Quick question. I got a 2008 Ford F-150. been a great vehicle. Had to replace the radiator recently, but I'm kind of just interested to know what Jim might think about preventative things I can do now to make sure that this guy keeps running well.
How many miles are on it, roughly?
100,000.
100,000. You know, I don't know Ford's manufacturer's maintenance recommendations for that vehicle, but, you know, generally, just keeping up with that is all you typically really have to do. I mean, there's going to be replacement intervals for spark plugs and for air filter and, you know, obviously the oil change interval and other fluids, you know, like your antifreeze and for your cooling system, your radiator and transmission fluid are going to, and differential fluids are all going to have intervals to be done. You know, keeping up with that really is all you really should have to do. I mean, there are occasional repairs that may come up otherwise, but typically they're not the kind of things that you're going to be able to do preventative maintenance to prevent, you know. So I would keep up with the manufacturer's schedule on that vehicle, and you should get another 100,000 miles out of it.
Yeah, there you go, Andy. Thank you for calling. Diane in rural Verona, on to you now. Hi, Diane.
Hi. My question may have already been answered, but I want you to look into my crystal ball and tell me how much longer I'm going to get the usage out of my 2011 XC90. I brought it brand new. It's got 217,000 miles on it. I've just owned Volvos all my life. I love them, and I don't want to sell this guy.
Well, you know, that isn't a lot of miles on a Volvo. You probably know if you've owned them all your life. And again, you know, just keeping up with the manufacturer's schedule maintenance for that vehicle is really the key. I mean, as far as at one point was a Volvo dealer, so I worked with Volvos for many years when we had that franchise, and they are, I remember there was a guy that he was in some of Volvo's commercials that had an older model, a P. I can't remember what it was off the top of my head, but he had driven it 500,000 miles, and I think more recently I saw that he got to 1,000,000 miles on it. So Volvos are certainly known to be cars that will last a long time, and, you know, it sounds oversimplistic to say just keep up with the manufacturer's maintenance intervals, but that, you know, it's amazing how many people don't. So just doing that is really, that's what you need more than you need a crystal ball. Just keep that schedule going and keep that car going, and you can probably double that mileage on it.
Diane, good luck. Thank you for calling. Chris in Prairie du Chien, excuse me. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Morning, gentlemen. I got a 2017 Dodge Journey. About 43,000 miles on it. I had to take it in this winter because it couldn't get it started, and they found that some spark plugs had to be replaced, cylinders had to be replaced, fuel injector, O-ring kit, and gasket. Got that all fixed in that about 6 weeks ago, and now it's starting to do some of the same things it was doing before. The engine light keeps going on.
And, well, I'm not. The work you said, some of the work sounds pretty common. The plugs, injectors are not really uncommon. I'm not sure. Cylinder work they may have done. Usually doing anything with cylinders is like an engine overhaul, thousands of dollars. So, you know, that would be pretty deep work and pretty involved. But if you're getting a check engine light on, that's going to leave a code that's going to tell at least which system. It could be multiple systems that would trigger the light to come on, but that's where to start, is to find out what the code is. You know, if you've had that work done that recently, I would talk to that shop again. Ultimately, I wouldn't think they'd really charge you just to check the code and see if it's something that's potentially related to the work that was done. But that's where I would start. I would contact them and find out if they're willing to just check what the code is, and that's going to be the first clue to lead you where you have to go from here.
Yeah. Good luck, Chris. Thank you. Roxanne and Delavan, on to you now. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi there. I have a 2013 RAV, and my battery died last week. We left the light on in the car, and my husband charged the battery. And when we started it, our phones were disconnected. Everything cleared in the car. Except for some lights on the dashboard, which the AWD and the anti-skid light stay on now.
And they were not on before?
No, they were not on before. Okay. And I took it to our mechanic, and he cleared a whole bunch of codes, and he couldn't clear those.
Well, the battery going dead can cause this, and it's so things, any kind of, you know, memory issues like that will get lost if that battery goes dead and is dead long enough. So you, from anything from your preset stations on your radio to, you know, how you have some other customizations, things like the windows, automatic windows that have the stop protection, that may be lost. And so sometimes when that happens, there's some calibrations that need to be done. And with your anti-skid and all the drive lights coming on, it sounds like there's probably a steering calibration that is probably going to need to be done. You know, a dealer, or any shop, doesn't have to be a dealer, can do some of that if they're familiar with that system. But something has lost its calibration. I don't think you've had, like, a major component failure, but if those lights are on, there are going to be codes for those systems. I think it's just going to be like a zero-point calibration is what they typically call it that's going to need to be done to get rid of those lights. And it probably all just goes back to the battery dying and losing the computer, losing the memory for all of those things.
Yeah. Good luck, Ray. Roxanne, thank you. Bruce in Tomahawk, your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I have a 2014 Chevy Suburban. Love the vehicle. It was overheating about 4 months ago, the dealership, and they did replace the radiator and I think maybe the thermostat. Subsequent to this, I noticed that the temperature does not get up 260 degrees that it normally did previously. And I don't get as much heat in the winter as I would like. We discussed it with the dealership. They said something about the thermostats are made in China now or whatever, but I guess my question is, should I change the thermostat again? Believe what the dealer is telling me.
Well, that certainly can happen. I mean, a thermostat, and that's what this sounds like, is that the thermostat's is not really operating properly. There are different temperature thermostats too. There are thermostats that are made to, you know, allow the engine to operate at a temperature range. So some cooler, some hotter. Now all of them should be below overheating, obviously. You know, that is the most likely scenario here, is that you've got a malfunctioning thermostat. You know, the coolant level being slightly low can cause you to, and it's easy when you. Unfortunately, it's easy when you do cooling system work and you replace a radiator and a thermostat and then you fill it back up with coolant, it's very easy for there to be an air bubble in there that's difficult to get burped out. And when that air bubble eventually works out, the result is that the coolant's a little low. It could be a half a quart low. That's enough to keep you from having as good a heat as you should have, but that really wouldn't cause the temperature gauge to read higher or lower if it's not, you know, really, really low. So, you know, if the coolant level is correct, if it's not low, then the thermostat is your most likely problem. They should have a warranty on that. And they can test that thermostat. You take it out and you put it in a beaker of you know, boiling water that you take out of a microwave, and just to pop the thermostat in there and see if it's operating at the right temperature that it's supposed to open at.
Yeah, there you go, Bruce. Thank you. Johan in New Glarus. Hi, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Say, I have a 2007 Toyota Tundra with a 5.7 liter motor, and about three times a year, it doesn't start. If I let it sit for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, I'll crank it in the interim, and then it goes. I have to put it in drive really quick and take off, or else it stalls. I replaced the crank position sensor. I don't know what else to do. Maybe you might have some thoughts.
When you try to start and it doesn't start, it does crank over. It does. Rah, 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 rah. It's cranking like that?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, on that particular model of vehicle, I have seen a battery that actually, yeah, typically if you have a failed battery, the engine doesn't crank or crank slow. But I've seen that on a Tundra where a battery that was allowing the engine to crank, but it wasn't, you know, it just didn't have enough voltage. So, you know, it's a simple test. I would get the battery test and make sure it passed the load test. Beyond that, you know, a crank sensor, yeah, is something that I've seen cause that kind of an issue before. You know, I don't know of something else that I can tell you, though. Those are the two most common things I've seen as a battery that I would have expected the engine not to crank over, but it did, and it just didn't have enough power to start it. And then, yeah, crank sensors are really, there's not a lot that goes wrong with Tundras, and those are certainly the two most common things.
Yeah. Johan, good luck. Thank you. Larry in Fond du Lac. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Okay, so I've got a 2017 Nissan Titan, and I have the air conditioning on, and then I'll put the blower on high. And as I'm driving, as the vehicle changes, like, say, speed or RPMs, so does the blower motor. The blower will blow high, and it'll blow a little less, and you can feel it, you know, with the strength, and, you know, it'll be like 100%, and it may be 50%, and 100%, and 70%.
All right.
Yeah, it's odd to get that fluctuation, and obviously there's something about the charging system that you know, that it's responding to, you know, and that's basically what you want to have done is the charging system test, find out what the alternator output is, make sure that the belt forward is tight enough, but it could be that the belt's slipping a little bit and then grabs, that usually would make some noise as well, but yeah, the blower shouldn't be fluctuating like that with the output of the electrical system, the way you're describing it, the voltage should be more regulated, and so it's not normal for that to happen. I wouldn't necessarily automatically assume you got a bad alternator, but there should be some testing done on that charging system to see what's going on there.
Yeah. Larry, good luck. Thank you for calling. Jim Ward, our guest today, service manager of Smart Motors Toyota of Madison, and he'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. So stay with us as we talk with him. We're going to take a look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Jim. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with vehicle maintenance expert Jim Ward. Retired a couple years ago as service manager of Smart Motors Toyota of Madison. He was with the company for 36 years, and he knows a lot about cars. So what questions do you have about your car? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Tom in Eagle River has a question for you, Jim. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a 2005 Pontiac Vibe, same as the Toyota Matrix, and I have a leak. When it rains, water accumulates in the pillar next to the driver's seat, and I can't seem to find where the water is coming in, and apparently, according to the Internet, it's not an uncommon problem, and no one seems to know on the Internet where it actually leaks. What can you tell me about that?
Well, a leak in that area, one possibility I'd be looking at is a windshield. If the windshield, you know, I don't know if you've owned the car since it was new, but replacement, if the windshield's ever been replaced, it's going to have, you're going to be able to tell by looking at the manufacturer name on it. It'll be Safelite or something other than the original manufacturer. It's possible to have body seams that leak at the bottom, at the base of that pillar or at the fender there as well. But, you know, the most common thing I've seen to cause water accumulate there is a windshield leak.
All right. There you go, Tom. It's probably the windshield. Ron in Manitowoc County, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Thanks, Larry. 2015 RAV4, surging in a transmission at low speeds, shifting up and down constantly.
Hmm.
Yeah, kind of a common symptom on some of the RAV4s, and there have been various bulletins that they've come out with, and updates for the software for the computer that controls the transmission. So I would check in with the dealer and find out if that is applicable to your car, and if it hasn't been done, it should be. And that's kind of a common complaint, a common symptom with that transmission. There should be a software update that would resolve that.
All right, Ron, thanks. John in Duluth, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a 2009 Toyota Sienna with about 205,000 miles on it. Intermittently, the check engine light comes on, and whenever that comes on, the VRS light and the Trax control lights also come on. I've headed into mechanic. The check engine light yesterday, actually, it was in. They said it coded out as, like, a coil in cylinder 6. And but when they checked it dynamically with it running, you know, it showed no problems. Very occasionally I've had it all of a sudden run rough and miss, but then it goes away.
Well, that's pretty classic for an ignition coil. They don't tend to just fail and not come back. They tend to be intermittent like that at first. What I have found is that if a technician is testing it, you can take some soapy water and spray that coil, and if it's a bad coil, it's pretty likely to act up on you right then. So that, you know, they tend to lose their ground through the housing of the coil, and that soapy water just, you know, a new coil is not going to react to that, or a good coil is not going to react to that, but one that's losing its ground, and that's the most common thing that happens to them, will react to that. So, yeah, it is the kind of thing where you have to kind of catch it red-handed, but you can kind of help that along with a spritzer bottle of soapy water. That's what I would recommend that shop try. I mean, they even know, you know, the code is specific enough to tell you which coil. And so, even though it dynamically tested good at that point, that's not unusual. I still believe you got a bad coil, and that would cause, you know, potentially cause all those lights to come on. It doesn't necessarily mean that the VSC or track system has a problem. The check engine light will bring those other ones on as well.
John, thank you very much for calling. We have someone has a 2016 Dodge Grand Caravan. It's been evaluated by two transmission shops to need a new torque converter lockup switch. Is this worth the van? They've heard that they may end up replacing the entire transmission if this doesn't fix it.
The 16 Caravan, it probably is still worth doing the repair to, but it can be a fairly expensive repair. There's no way of knowing if you're just going to stop at a sensor for the torque converter or the torque converter itself, or, you may have to put a remanufactured transmission in it. But if the vehicle is still in fairly good shape and a 16, it probably would be. It's probably worth doing it.
Christy in rural Dane County, your turn. Hi, Christy.
Hi. First, thanks for having this program. I always learn a lot. We have a 2019 Toyota Camry Hybrid. It's our third Toyota Camry. We love them. This one has synthetic oil, and at the 5,000-mile mark, there's a screen that comes up on the dash that says, maintenance retired, maintenance required, and you can't see any of the information behind it. So while the place we get our oil changed says we should be able to go 6,000 miles, we always get it changed right after that comes up because we want to be able to see data on the screen in front of us. Help
right.
me explain this dilemma.
Well, the interval for the oil change is actually 10,000 miles. The interval for a service on the vehicle is 5,000. Not every service includes an oil change. I don't by any means think it's a bad idea to change your oil at 5,000 or 6,000 miles. And in fact, that a few years ago, that was kind of a controversy. The problem came up. I always decided on it. If it's a 10,000-mile interval, you don't need to change them any longer than that. But then a couple of the models that Toyota had developed oil consumption problems, and ultimately, if you were changing your oil every 5,000, you probably stayed ahead of that oil consumption and didn't end up with engine damage. And if you didn't, you might have ended up with some engine damage or finding an oil light coming on. So it's kind of a dirty trick manufacturers play with those screens that you've got all this information that you're used to looking at. They don't want you to ignore when maintenance is due, so of course they block some of that information when that reminder comes up. That's a fairly easy reset. I mean, you could Google it. You can have a shop reset that for you so you can see your screens again without necessarily doing any of the maintenance, although the maintenance is recommended. But at those off intervals where you're not doing the oil change, the tire rotation and some other basic inspections are what are recommended. So that light will come on every 5,000. The oil change only do every other one of those. I really don't think it's necessarily a bad idea to change the oil more often. You can change it every 5,000-6,000 if you want to, and you probably will make the car last longer if you do. That's basically what that is about.
Christy, thank you for calling. Lindsay emailed, they have a 2013 Prius C2 with 224,000 miles. The AC stopped working correctly last August. When the engine kicks on, it only blows hot air. When the engine stops and it's running on the battery only, cold air blows like normal. Any suggestions?
that is well, the heater, the hot air, tends to come from the engine itself, from the heat that the engine transfers into the antifreeze, and then that antifreeze goes through a unit in the dash, and that's where your heat comes from. So when the engine quits running, that antifreeze doesn't instantly go cold, but something, you know, there are air blend doors and other things that normally wouldn't be triggered by just the vehicle going to electric only, but there's got to be something malfunctioning there that is shutting off that heat flow. And I unfortunately can't tell you just off the top of my head what it is, but some inspections need to be done. And again, I presume that this is consistent. It does it all the time, so it should be something pretty easy to duplicate and you know, do some basic inspections to find out why that's happening. But yeah, that's a malfunction, probably in the heater controls or some of the doors that they operate.
Becky says she needs her oil changed and tires rotated. Her dealership is booking a month out. Is it okay to go to a different local business? Will that mess up her records at the dealership?
It won't. And if they're booked out a month, they can't expect you to wait that long. I mean, you know, people have lives to live. You got to operate your vehicle and take it places. So it's certainly okay to take it somewhere else. You know, and then, you know, you can just let them know, you know, contact them and say, you know, I would have got it done there if you could do it, but you couldn't. So I had this done just so you know for my records that I had it done. You know, one of the main things is just to keep your records yourself. And if you do a Carfax on a vehicle, the records show up from any shop that you've had work done, whether it's the dealership or a different dealership or an independent shop. So, you know, there will be a consistent record out there for what you did. Keeping your own records is a good idea. And again, just let the dealership know, you know, we would have done it here if you could have got us in, but you couldn't, so we had it done. That way they know what is current on the car.
Pat in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I have a 2005 Prius. Very happy with it. I've only got about 90,000 miles on it. I'm wondering, what is the history for the older Priuses for the big battery?
Well, it's very good. I mean, you know, the majority of them out there are still operating on their original battery. I mean, they can fail. About 90,000 miles on it. You know, I wouldn't. A battery could fail on a vehicle at that mileage. I would expect it to go longer than that. You know, it isn't like a wear item that we can say just what mileage it's going to fail at. But most. Most 05 Priuses, the vast majority of them, are still running on with that original battery, and you know, you could easily get 200,000 to 300,000 miles another 5 to 10 years before it might fail. But it's not the easiest thing to predict when they're going to fail either. But you know, there's just no reason to think it's not going to last longer than it has. The majority of them do.
Thanks, Pat, for calling. Barb emailed. She has a question regarding a 2021 Ford Bronco. The brakes are extremely noisy, kind of a low groaning sound when the car's in reverse and most often occurring when the brakes are wet. They've been told nothing can be done. However, it's really noisy to the point they can hear it a half a block away.
Well, it's not that nothing can be done. It's that there's probably nothing that the warranty is going to cover for free that can be done. Brake noise is just the kind of thing that can drive us nuts at a dealership level. If you're a dealership, you know, as opposed to any other shop, you're considered the manufacturer. So if you're a Ford dealer and Ford comes and tells you as a dealership, well, you know what, we've got some brake pads that are kind of noisy when they're damp, and that's just the way it is. It's kind of a regional thing. Probably isn't something they experience in Arizona, but here in Wisconsin, if a vehicle has a brake pad that's going to make any kind of a noise under those kind of circumstances, we're going to experience it here. But that's not to say that you couldn't get some aftermarket, a different type of brake pad. You can get some ceramic brakes. It's kind of an upgrade, from what you have that potentially could be quite a bit quieter than those that are in it. You'd like to, you know, in most of our minds, it's like, well, that shouldn't be happening. That's a defect that should be covered under warranty. But, you know, manufacturers don't always look at it that way, so you're probably not going to win that argument, but you probably can get rid of your brake noise with a different set of brake pads than the original Bronco ones.
Another listener wonders whether it's better for brakes when coming to a stop sign or a red light to pump the brakes a little at a time or sort of give it one big push.
It's better to pump the brakes, and it's better to brake earlier than later, you know, and that's going to basically make your brakes last longer, but pumping it also just, you get more fluid into the system, more pressure. So it, it, pumping the brakes is the recommended way to do it. All that being said, that brake noise, we've had a couple of different calls today about brake noise when it's damp out. Some people, you know, and it's not, this isn't a bad thing, but, you know, you want to make your brakes last a long time. And sometimes there are people who will brake very early and tend to just, you know, always think of it as there being like an egg underneath that pedal and just being very easy with them. That can contribute to more of that kind of brake noise and let that oxidation and rust build up on the brake rotors a little more. So, you know, it's not a bad idea to occasionally create some friction and hit the brakes a little bit harder. But as a rule, you want to brake early, pump the pedal, you know, take it easy on them, and they'll last longer.
Therese in Lake Geneva will give you a chance. Hi, Therese.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I have a Toyota RAV4. It's a 2014, and I've had it 3 years, and I've learned how to use the GPS. Last week, I was up in Milwaukee, and the GPS got me lost. It was telling me to turn the wrong way. Do GPSs have to be updated?
They do. They do. They make new software for them. It tends to come out every October for Toyota, and it isn't necessarily every year is a great big upgrade, but every couple of years is a fairly significant upgrade. So on a 14, you know, that's several years of probably a few different generations of new software for that. So, yeah, that can be pretty disconcerting in a city they're not perfectly familiar with, and it starts telling you to go someplace that doesn't work. But, yep, there are updates for them. Doesn't tend to be free. You do tend to have to pay for them. But if you travel a lot, it tends to be worth it.
Thanks, Therese. Appreciate it. Larry in Rice Lake, your turn. Hi, Larry.
Hello. I have a question on manufacturers' recalls, but before I get to it, regarding the caller that called in with water dripping or leaking from the pillar by the windshield, and you mentioned the windshield, yeah, for sure the windshield is probably the cause, but I had the same symptoms with a vehicle, and it was leaking. It was a sunroof, moonroof drain that is supposed to drain along through the pillar down and yep. to the bottom of the car. And so, yeah, that was plugged in my situation, and the whole pillar got soaked and was dripping. And but that's what that was.
Just yep, that's what I have to do.
Yep. And you had a question, Larry.
Yeah, regarding manufacturer's recalls, I have a 2004 Nissan Titan that I bought 7 or 8 years ago, had an airbag light flashing at the time. I bought it from a Honda dealer, and they were selling it as is, but they told me the flashing light for the airbag was associated with a recall and that Nissan would have to repair that. I was skeptical, but Nissan repaired it. After I got the car home and called the Nissan dealer and made a couple trips. So this is resurfaced, and the recall for the airbag situation was tied to wiring harnesses going through the back doors that open backwards on an extended cab. So and I'm trying to get my Nissan dealer to look at it again regarding that old recall, and they're not too excited to go back to a recall that was already resolved, but it's really not because the same wiring harness exists and they didn't replace it. So is Nissan expected or required to revisit that old recall? That's my question.
Typically, once a recall has been performed, unless the manufacturer realizes that there was something wrong with their procedure or something didn't go right, they typically are not going to relaunch the recall and start covering and repairing the cars again. You know, that being said, it's possible for technicians to do recalls incorrectly. You know, sometimes the wording isn't perfectly straight. I've seen some confusion on those before. What you may want to do is reach out to Nissan themselves rather than the dealer and contact them and just let them know what your experience is and see if they would be willing to do anything for you. They may be willing, particularly, you know, there's lots of different kinds of recalls, but manufacturers are particularly sensitive to things like airbag recalls. That kind of a safety system is something that they typically want to make sure it's working right. When a car is getting quite a bit older. An 04 isn't a terribly old car, but there comes a point where your manufacturer is probably not going to give you much support at all anymore. But again, because this is an airbag system, I would contact Nissan directly, the manufacturer, and just, you know, find out if they're willing to do something for you because it's an airbag light, at least to go through a diagnostic process to find out if maybe those connections for that wire harness are a problem again, or if maybe they weren't done properly the first time.
Good luck, Larry. Thank you. Bob in Winona, Minnesota, on to you. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Well, I got a Toyota Prius of 2022 I've had since August 6th. I've got 67,000 miles on it right now. And I'm just curious what I should be looking for when I go in for my 70,000-mile inspection.
What you should be looking for is what your manual says is recommended for that maintenance interval, and make sure that, because there's no requirement from Toyota or any other manufacturer that dealerships or any other repair shop for that matter stick to that list of manufacturer recommended, Toyota's recommended service items. You know, dealers may, and sometimes it's with legitimate reason that dealers will say, you know what, we recommend it, and often they won't say it. They'll just say this is what's required. But they may add other services, other fluid changes that the manufacturer doesn't recommend at that interval. Again, sometimes there's valid reasons for that, but they should be able to tell you what those reasons are. Why would you, why would you vary from the manufacturer's recommendations here and recommend I do something else? And if they can't say, well, we've seen some failures, we've seen this and that, if it's just because it's a good idea to do preventative maintenance, you know, and something that the manufacturer didn't recommend, then I might be kind of shy of that. But that's the very first thing I would do, is make sure you have a maintenance book that came with it. It's not the owner's manual, but it will tell you what's supposed to be done at various mileages. And, you know, just make sure that that's what they're doing. They're not adding a bunch of other things that, somebody's trying to make a boat payment or something.
There you go, Bob. Thanks. David Appleton, hi.
How's it going?
Good. Appreciate it. What's on your mind?
Well, I just want to tell a story of what happened to me last week. I live in Appleton. A friend and I drove up to Iron Mountain in the UP for about a couple hours. Really snowy up there still. And then we drove back down to Door County and caught the sun going down over Green Bay. Went to the other side of the peninsula, saw the moon coming up. Really cool. Anyway, car's driving fine, 2016 Toyota. We get back in the car to drive home, and my friend's driving it. And suddenly takes a left turn, and the car just kind of chunks and sort of at 20 miles an hour slows down. And then I kind of looked at him funny, but it didn't say anything. And then we're at a stop sign, and the same thing happens at about 20 miles an hour. I'm like, and he turns to me and goes, there's something wrong with your car. And there's no warning lights on at all.
All right. Well, what do you think, Jim?
Huh. Well, is there more to this story, Dave? Did you?
We're out of time, so we can't go into more detail.
Boy, I couldn't tell you. Just not enough information to really know what might have gone on there.
Yeah, it's too bad. You probably need to get in and get a service check, Dave. I think that's what you might want to do for sure. Jim, it's always a pleasure. I don't know how many calls you answered today, but it was a ton.
It was fun. It has been fun, as always.
Well, I hope you'll do it again, and thanks so much for today. Appreciate it.
You bet. Good talking to you, Larry.
Jim Ward retired last year as service manager of Smart Motors Toyota with the company for 36 years. He does a wonderful job. Thank you to Jim, and thanks to you for listening. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, Aaron Presley from Olbrich Botanical Gardens is back to talk about spring ephemerals and native plants for your shade garden. That's tomorrow at 11. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Neeler.